Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Linda Fitzgerald. She is the author of Live Ammo, second book in her Live series. We are going to delve into Linda's writing, but also a little bit into her personal life and how it actually shapes her writing. But first, a little bit about Linda. Linda Fitzgerald is a multi-genre author who is now writing mystery. She studied creative writing at both Georgia Perimeter College, where she was awarded the Creative Writing Scholarship, and at Emory University in Atlanta. Her debut novel, If Truth Be Told, was released in 2007. Her second, Of Words and Music, was released in 2008, and her first mystery series, Lie Ringer, hit the shelves in April 2010. Live Ammo, the second in the series, and the one that we're talking about today, was released in this year, 2012, and Live in Person is expected to be released in the spring of 2013. Linda is a frequent teacher and lecturer on writing skills. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Irene. How are you?
Well, great. Wow, you're a prolific writer. You've been writing up a storm over since 2007.
Yes, I have. Well, you know, I've been writing for 30 years, so when my first book came out, I had actually written seven.
Mm-hmm. Published?
No. The first one was the third one that I wrote, and the others are coming along as time passes.
So are you able to go back then to those books that you've written before and sort of revisit them and pull out aspects of them?
I have to. It's funny. The first book I ever wrote, I titled it Our Ideal, and it's still sitting in a drawer because I have rewritten it four or five times, and I still don't think it's publishable, and I won't send it out there until I do. So, yeah, I love to go back and revise them.
You said an important word here. You don't feel that they're publishable. What does that mean?
I don't feel it's good enough to be out there with my name on it. I know a lot of authors write under an assumed name. Mine is my own, and I have to be proud to put it on something before I want to see it published.
Well, I'm so glad you said that because, you know, as a review service, we get oodles of books.
Yeah.
And, you know, not every author feels this way.
I know that.
It's like, you know, sometimes they just want to get a book out there as fast as they possibly can and get their name on it and, you know, kind of bypass some things like content editing. Yes.
Well, you know, I feel so strongly about that. And I belong to a critique group, and I also teach a lot of classes on writing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I tell them is you can self-publish, but if you're going to self-publish, for heaven's sake, make sure it's something that you can be proud of, that has been looked over thoroughly, because once it's out there with your name on it, it's out there. I don't know if you've read any. Have you read any Harlan Coben?
No.
Okay. He is one of my absolute favorite suspense writers in the world. And I read his first book, which came out after he became, you know, world famous. And in the front of it, he said, if this is the first book of mine you've read, please don't. Start with another one, because I never could get it quite right. And he was right. It was terrible. But I was so proud of him for saying that. Yes, he put it out there. I'm sure he had publisher pressure. But he was able to say, don't let this be the first or only book of mine you read.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What a great concept. And it's like, you know, setting aside the ego.
Right.
Yes. So, Live Ammo. Now, this is the second in the series. Your first one was
Live
Ringer. Mm-hmm. Yes. And tell us a little bit about Live Ammo.
Okay, well, let me tell you a little bit about how this started, because Live Ringer was going to be a standalone novel. I had no intention of doing a series. I had always written standalone novels. I didn't have any knowledge of writing a series. I got to the end of that book, and by then I was so hooked on the characters and the storyline, and there was no way, unless I had written a 1,000-page book, I could have carried it to its conclusion. But I said, okay, I've got to write a sequel. And then I outlined three more, one of which is already written. But Live Ringer is about a young woman who has just gone through a very nasty, ugly divorce. While she's going through this divorce, her beloved aunt, who is her mother of choice, dies, leaving her a ton of money and a house on the beach, which is my favorite beach. And she comes there, all she wants to do is just heal from all of it, from all of the loss, from losing her marriage, which she really wanted to work, from losing her aunt. And the first day she's there, she stumbles across a body floating in the water, and that begins a serial killer coming after her.
Uh-huh.
So that's the first one. Now, what happened is that all the characters in this book assumed real lives while I was writing the first one, and I needed to see what was going to happen to them. So all the characters that are alive after the first book are there in the second, and in the third, you know, I lose one character who dies, and then the rest of them are there. So it became a series. Live Ammo is a little bit 6 months later. And the sheriff, who I'm not going to tell you much about him, except he's an interesting man, of the county where she is his wife commits suicide, allegedly, but his son is absolutely convinced that she was killed by the sheriff. And this son sets out to prove it. Allie sets out to prove he's innocent. And so, of course, sparks are flying all over the place. So that's a little bit of the second one.
Now, I heard you say divorce. The character is divorced. And from my understanding is also that most of your female characters are divorced. And I'm wondering why.
Yeah, maybe because I've had experience with that. I am divorced. I know what a divorce can do to you, even if you want it. A divorce can be extremely painful. If you don't want it, it's awful. If your mate did something heinous like hers did, then it's hard to get past it and have confidence in yourself again. I think a divorce more than almost anything in the world causes you to, I sound like I'm playing amateur shrink, and I'm not, but I think it causes you to lose self-confidence. You've made especially in a case like Allie's, the heroines, you've made a bad choice, and you can't trust yourself anymore to make choices. So it takes time to regain that confidence, and you can only do it by making those hard choices you don't want to make.
And obviously that really comes through in your books.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you find that also in real life and in your books as they go through the stuff that they go through,
uh-huh.
that because they are divorced that they possibly gain more independence for themselves?
I think they gain more independence. They become stronger individuals. I think they know themselves more deeply after a divorce than they ever could have before, because after a divorce, and I know from personal experience and from friends' experience, you ask yourself a lot of questions you never would have even thought of had you stayed married all your life.
Such as?
Well, like the ultimate one, did I make the bad decision? Why did I make the bad decision?
Mm-hmm.
Will I be able to make it on my own? That's a good one.
That's always the big one.
Yeah, I remember that from my own experience, and I made it better after my divorce than I did. And I've been divorced a very long time and been on my own. And another thing I've seen that people might not like to hear, but it's something that I have seen in my personal experience and read about, seen it in family members. Sometimes, well, first of all, not everybody's made to be married, I don't think. I am not marriage material. I just don't have the ability to compromise. I don't know. I'm not sure what I don't have, but what I don't have ultimately is the need to be married or the ability to be married, to make it work. And maybe that's because I came from parents who divorced. I remember someone saying to me once, you know, you learned how to make a marriage not work. You never saw it modeled how to make a marriage work. But, yeah, I think I saw it with my own mother. You know, as long as she was with my father, he was a very strong man. I don't mean domineering or overbearing at all, but just a very strong human being. And she always was a little, I don't want to say wishy-washy, but she deferred all decisions to him. He was a disciplinarian. He was the everything. When they separated and divorced ultimately, she turned into a real-life person on her own. It was just amazing to me to see the difference. I liked her, and I had not liked her when she was married to my father. Well, that's not true. I liked them both, but I admired her as she became stronger and stood on her own 2 feet.
You know, I hear you, because as you were talking about that, my parents were not divorced. They were married, and when my father passed, I believe they were married something like 62 years.
Wow.
Maybe it was even longer. But once he passed, my mother got a life.
Yeah.
And at 87, she is one Spitfire.
You're kidding.
She is busy. She is so busy doing all these things with her widow female friends.
Yeah.
And one of them drives, fortunately, and they are independent. They go everywhere.
I know. There's just something about, and it doesn't even have to be female companionship. I've got a lot of really good male friends. We go to the dog park, and,
right.
you know, if I need an escort or something, I'll call one of them and say, hey, you know, be my date for the night if you would. And, but we're just friends. But if I were to get into a romantic relationship, I love writing about romance. Excuse me, a whole lot better than I like living it.
You're funny.
It's dramatic. It's emotional.
Yeah.
It's difficult. It's always compromise. And it's not that I'm so rigid. I guess it's that I've been on my own since I was 32. And that's a long time to be on your own. When you hit 60, that's a long time.
Linda, you said something really important. You said you're not marriage material. And I just really want to honor you for being able to say that, because I think that there are a lot of women, and probably men too, that are not marriage material, but because of society, and especially back in our era, you know, it was like, I got married at 21, and I was like one of the older ones.
Oh, I know.
And if I didn't get married within the next 2 or 3 years, I'd be an old maid for sure.
You'd be an old maid, and people would actually back then suspect you were gay. I don't know if you remember that little philosophy thing.
Well, not in the culture where I grew up.
Okay.
That wasn't even talked about, and I don't even
but it wasn't said out loud, but Jay always wondered.
Wondered, exactly.
Why isn't she married?
Why isn't she married?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And, but I think that that is changing now.
Yes.
I think that there are more and more women and men, too, saying, you know, I'm not marriage material.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Right. It's not a black mark on your record anymore.
Yeah.
I, too, married at 21. I married, I thought I wanted to. I think it was more than anything else. I didn't have a friend by then that wasn't married. Even the ones in college were married.
Yeah.
Still in college.
Yes.
And I felt like totally the odd man out. I thought I would be a happily married woman, an earth mother type, because I adore children. I figured I'd have 5 boys. All this you go through when you're 19 or 20, right? I'd have 5 boys, and I would just do all the athletics with them and do all of that. Well, I ended up having 1 boy, 1 girl. I adore my kids. I adore my grandkids. I still like to go out with my grandson. He's 8. And climb trees and ride bikes and roller skate. And you know, I think the youngsters keep you young. But I wish I – and I would not – I mean, if I hadn't gotten married, I wouldn't have my kids or my grandkids. So that – I've got friends that have never had kids or grandkids. And it is a little bit sad that they didn't have that in their lives, because it's magic. But I probably should never have married. It's just – it's fact.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, and it's great to be able to talk about it, too.
Yeah.
And admit it and move on. But still be able to, you know, enjoy your children, enjoy your grandchildren, and just know where you are and what works for you and what doesn't.
Yeah, I can't tell you how long it took me to do that, but it was a very long time.
Well, obviously now you can talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll be back. More Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through Direct Podcast, as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Linda Fitzgerald, author of Live Ammo. As you've heard so far, she is a very prolific writer, and this is her second book in the series. Stay tuned, because there is much more for Linda I'm sure that you're going to find interesting. Linda, do you, you had mentioned a little bit that, you know, you do write from your own experiences. And I'm just curious, how much of the book or the books that you have written are really based on your own experience or maybe somebody that you know, a friend or a relative, and, you know, pulling out the characters from them?
Right. Well, the first one, If Truth Be Told, it wasn't autobiographical because the main character never existed in my life or my family, but the plot line came from a situation that happened in my own life. And I can't give it away because it's really a surprise. It's a weird book. That book they called it romantic suspense, but it really is odd. It's a little bit mainstream. It's a little bit romance, a lot of suspense, but I really don't. They just didn't know what to call it. You know, even my publisher, it was 5-star Thompson Gale back then, they said, you know, we're taking a chance with this cross-genre book because they didn't know exactly what to call it. So that very much was autobiographical. The second one is about a grandmother and granddaughter. Grandmother gets this 14-year-old granddaughter dumped on her. She didn't know she existed. And they cannot communicate in any way. And if they can't learn to communicate, she's going to end up adopted or in a foster home or something. And she's been through so much losing her parents, a little girl. And music is what brings them together. And that came from I was actually editing If Truth Be Told when a young woman came to my house. I hope I don't run out of time, but this young woman came to my house, and I used to sew back then, and I was doing a junior bridesmaid's dress for her, and I was supposed to measure her, and she was just sullen, unpleasant. Her mom was one of my coworkers back then, and she was mad at her mom for remarrying, very, very unhappy child, and was totally rude to us until she saw my piano. And she said, "Do you play piano?" And I said, "Well, I'm taking lessons." Well, I started piano at 50, okay, so I hadn't been taking lessons long. And we found out that we were learning some of the same songs, and we sat down and played the piano, and she became just all fluttery happy, and her mom said it brought her around. It was the telling thing that brought her around.
Wow.
And that's the gist of the plot of that book. There's a whole lot more to it. But then it's really funny. Live Ringer, the first one in the mystery series, I was sitting on the jetty at Cape Canaveral, my feet dangling in the water, and I saw something floating towards me, and it looked like a dead fish belly up. And then it floated closer and closer, and all the time I'm thinking, no, it's an arm. And it's attached to a body. Of course, it was a fish. But for that moment, that story was born. And I gave her my Aunt Lou. My Aunt Lou lived in Cape Canaveral, and she died. She had a house in Cape Canaveral. I didn't inherit it, unfortunately, but she passed away. She was literally my mother of choice. I adored this woman and was brokenhearted when she died. But this woman is dead before the series begins, and we never know. She's always whispering in Allie's ear little things, you know, maybe warning her or little bits of wisdom. And it's not a spooky thing. The reader never knows if she's really doing it or if it's Allie's mind having these conversations with her aunt, certainly not in the first book. But she just adds a whole different dimension to it. And I do actually have these conversations with my aunt because I know what she'd say. You know, and I'll have some question and I'll think, okay, Aunt Lou, what should I do? And, you know, I know she's not talking to me, but it feels like she's still there. Yeah.
Oh, neat. Great story. Great story.
Yeah.
You, Linda, you also have a lot of family dynamics that happen in your stories.
Yeah.
And so why are you choosing to have so many of them play a role in your writing?
You know, I came from a rather strange family. There were a lot of family, well, not strange family. What I'm saying is there were a lot of dynamics in my family. I could clearly see how they shaped me and my brother and sisters, and how they shaped my friends' lives. And, you know, characters in some books, it seems like they're born in a vacuum, like they never had a life before the book starts.
Right.
But they do. I mean, they do. Well, to me, they do. And so I think everything they do is coming from their life. So I tend to put a lot of their, without slowing the story down, hopefully, which I try not to do, put their background in so you can see their motivation for doing the things they do. So I think that's it. Family dynamics fascinate me. They always have, maybe because I had to learn to handle them as a kid. But they still fascinate me. I love watching families and seeing how different decisions impact the different members, and how you can almost predict what they're going to do in 5 years based on what's going on now.
Isn't it true? You know, as you're talking, I'm kind of listening to my own family dynamics and my culture. It's interesting to sort of reflect back or step away from it and observe what really does happen.
Well, it is, and the characters, they don't start out with all of this family history. It evolves when I'm writing them, but like I said, by the end of Live Ringer, there's several main characters, and not well, there's one main character, but there are several important key characters in that, and each one kind of became something I have to deal with in other books. You know, with Allie still as the main character, but her best friend Cheryl is like, you know, she looks like Sophia Loren meets Rambo. She's a cop, a deputy sheriff. Oh, and I always write about cops, and people ask me that, and it's because my whole family were cops.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, my granddad was chief of police at Tampa.
Interesting.
Yeah, my uncles were highway patrol in Florida, so I know lots about cops and how they think, and plus I read mystery incessantly.
So, obviously, then your male characters are based on family members.
Well, yeah, the sheriff that I'm not going to say much about in Live Ringer, I modeled him after my grandfather. He was the most amazing. He was kind of like, you know, old Ben the Gentle Giant sort of thing. Now, my mom said he wasn't quite that gentle. He was a very, very strict father and put up with no garbage. But and I'll tell you a story about him that personifies him. I never said anything to my brother or sisters until later in life that, you know, I was kind of sorry that I was always granddad's favorite. And my brother said, I was his favorite. And my older sister said, no. That's how he made us all feel.
Isn't that too funny?
Yeah, we all felt like his favorite. He treated us each especially so that we knew we were the most important one to him. That's lovely.
Isn't that lovely?
Yes.
No kidding. And, you know, but then what I'm also hearing, that there was this little twinge of guilt in that, because you thought that he treated you better than the others.
Oh, yeah. Because after he died, the loss, I mean, he and my Aunt Lou they were the two people that probably shaped me in life. He was my complete hero. And, of course, my brother is very much like him. My brother is another hero. He's still alive, thank heavens. I think he's 73 now. I can't remember. But going strong, on the boat every weekend, you know, he's on the go. He teaches, substitute teacher for school. So he's like another hero.
Yeah.
Aunt Lou died young, unfortunately, with Hodgkin's disease, just like Allie's Aunt Lou did. But she lived her life her way. She did not ask permission or apologize. And that intimidated people like my mother. But I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. This woman lived her own way.
Was she a mentor to you or a role model?
Absolutely.
I hear that.
You know, I went to her house one time. She had been sick for a long time, and her son was in college. And I went to her house. I was living in Georgia then, and she was still down in Cape Canaveral. And so we got there about 5 o'clock, and I said, oh, I'm so sorry. I said, what time do you eat dinner? And she said, whenever I damn well please. And I thought, yes.
Talk about women's independence. I tell you, that is great.
Yeah, really was.
Yeah, what a role model.
Yep.
Gosh, Linda, this has been so much fun. Thank you.
I have enjoyed it.
Please tell our listening audience your website address and where they can find out more about you and your books.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot on there on the website. Pictures of my family, pictures of the area I write about, and I'm down there all the time. You can get to the website two ways. You can either just type in lindafitzgerald.com, and that's with a Y, or you can type in fitzgeraldwrites.com. Either one will take you there.
All right, listeners, there you go. I'll just repeat that. Linda Fitzgerald, and Linda is L-Y-N-D-A, Fitzgerald.com, or FitzgeraldWrites.com.
Right. All of my books are on Kindle now.
Thank you so much. This is, as I say, it's been so much fun.
Thank you, Irene. I really enjoyed talking to you.
And listeners, as you've heard so far, Linda's just been a real treasure to talk to. And she is the author of Live Ammo. Please check it out. It is her second in her series. So I encourage you to also look at Live Ringer, because that will set you up for Live Ammo. And I know that you're going to enjoy them both. Thanks for listening. This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.